iFaith, message number 43 on Colossians. In our series of lessons, we've already looked at some of Paul's letters. One of our units explored the relationship between the old and the new, between Judaism and its logical extension, Christianity, between the Old Testament, the New Testament. And in that unit, we looked at Romans and Galatians, because the subject matter is similar. In our current unit, which goes through the remaining letters of Paul, we've already looked at his letters to the Thessalonians, who were very excited, some of them at least, about the end of the world, about the second coming. We also looked at his Corinthian letters, which, there's so much in there, so much to learn. We know a lot about the Corinthians, and these letters are very generous. And we've looked at Philippians, one of the four so-called prison epistles. We still have six of Paul's letters to cover, and today we're going to begin with Colossians. Now, Colossae is a city, or was a city, in what is today Western Turkey. Right now, of course, there are people who live near it, but it's a pile of collapsed layers of civilization. That's called a tell, and over all that dirt and rock, there's grass. Oh, you could walk on the top. I've walked there before. It's not been excavated yet. Only a few things in that area, because the energy and the attention, at least the last 10 or 15 years, have been going to Laodicea, which is an amazing site to visit. And also nearby, there's Hierapolis. These three cities, all mentioned in the New Testament, Hierapolis and Laodicea and Colossae, are in a valley called the Lycus Valley. And there's a river running through called the Meander. And in English, meander means that you're wandering all over the place, like, what's the point? What's going on? You're very casual. I won't try to do that in this lesson. I'll try to stop meandering. But sometimes the background is good. And so Colossae is the city, and the people who are from there are the Colossians. Now, we know quite a bit about what's going on in the background by reading between the lines. And this isn't difficult. And a lot of that actually comes out in chapter 2. And perhaps I'll just read some of these verses. In 2:4, Paul is appealing to them to be rooted in Jesus. He says, I'm saying this so no one may deceive you with plausible arguments. You know, things that sound right, but they're not solid. And he goes on a few verses later to say, see to it, no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition. So there is a kind of philosophy or elitist, you know, academic, what do we even call that? But you know, it's a kind of a snobbishness and people becoming too fond with the academic concepts. There's also, look what else is going on. There's the worship of angels. And where do I get that? Well, I get that near the end of the chapter. It says, don't let anyone disqualify you, insisting on self-abasement. Self-abasement is like punishing your body. When you love to be radical and strict, what we call asceticism. Don't let anyone disqualify you, insisting on that, and the worship of angels and dwelling on visions. So there's a kind of a veneration of angels going on. And angels, they're in the background of the Bible. I think Hebrews 1 tells us we shouldn't be so impressed. Jesus is who's impressive. But we shouldn't be focused on these. But there's more going on. Chapter 2 also makes it quite clear that some people are trying to mix elements of the Torah, the Jewish law, with Christianity. And he's quite specific. He refers to circumcision. And then he refers to food and drink, rules about that, which is what we call kosher law. And then new moons and Sabbaths. And he says these are just a shadow of what's to come. They're not important. They're not substantial. And so you've got people trying to blend philosophy and Judaism and angel worship with their Christianity. And one result, this is also in chapter 2, he says, if you died to the elemental spirits of the universe, why do you live as if you still belong to the world? Why do you submit to its regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. And he says these have an appearance of wisdom, but they really don't work. Having all these rules, that's not how you overcome the flesh. So this is what's going on in Colossians. A lot of stuff, a lot of things to distract them from Jesus Christ. Just a little bit about Paul, and then we're going to look into our text today, which is from the end of 1 and the beginning of 2. Paul had never yet been to Colossae. He acknowledges freely and gratefully that Epaphras is the church planter. Paul sometimes writes to cities he's never visited, like his letter to the Romans. But usually he was the planter, so this is different. He knows the people indirectly, but not from personal experience. Probably he wrote this at the same time as Philemon. Philemon is delivered, we believe, probably along with Colossians. They may have been delivered at the same time, to the same place. Philemon may even have been the letter to the Laodiceans. But this is one of Paul's prison epistles. Again, Colossians, there's Ephesians, there's Philemon, and there's Philippians. Paul's letters certainly tend to be packed with theology and practicals. You know, ever since I was a young Christian, I have been struck by a passage that spans the end of chapter 1 and the very beginning of chapter 2. And I came across a computer card just the other day. I wish I had it here because some of you have probably never seen that. This goes back to the 1970s. All the people who studied engineering at my university, at Duke University, had computer cards. And I would take the old ones out of the rubbish and reuse them because they're only, you know, one side is blank. And I looked at this computer card and I had some notes about a brother. Well, he was actually the janitor at our dormitory. He was the first person I reached out to who was ever baptized. And I had my concerns for how he's doing, and I had written down three passages. I'd written down Colossians 3:16, Ephesians 4:5, and Colossians 1:28, which is where we're going right now. For a long time, this has been an important passage to me, and I know it can be for you as well. Okay, so let me read the passage. And to get the most accurate feel I can, I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version, okay? It is He, Christ, whom we proclaim, warning everyone and teaching everyone in all wisdom, so that we may present everyone mature in Christ. For this I toil and struggle with all the energy He powerfully inspires within me. For I want you to know how much I'm struggling for you, and for those in Laodicea, and for all who have not seen me face to face. And I hope you'll read further, but we'll stop there for right now. You notice Paul says it's all about Christ. It's Christ we proclaim. And that tells me if I'm spending more time proclaiming a system or Christian logic or fine reasons and arguments, even if they're true, than Christ, that's not right. If I'm emphasizing the church more than Christ, or come and meet my impressive friends, that's not right. I'm recording this on a Saturday. There is a fellow that I had some time with this week, really great guy. He's coming on Sunday to church, not because I said, come and see this amazing church. So committed, so energetic, so diverse. I mean, okay, most churches will tend to be diverse and energetic if they're following the gospel. But it's not the church I'm preaching. I asked him if he'd just like to come with me. We're focusing on Christ. I think this could be very inspiring. And so far, he thinks so too. But it is easier, of course, just to preach the church. Like, well, our religion's better than yours, or our church is better than yours, or the way we preach Christ is better than the way you preach Christ. And that's not right. It's all about Him, not about impressive disciples or a phenomenal institution. Another thing we see from this passage is that this is a warning. Paul is very urgent in here. You could feel it in his tone. He says, Christ we proclaim, warning everyone, teaching everyone with all wisdom. It's very emphatic. He toils, he struggles. And again, he says he struggles. This is incredibly important. It is one of his strongest warnings that we find in these prison epistles. Three times we have the word everyone. Now, in some of the older English Bibles, it says every man. But in older English, man didn't mean a male. Man meant a person, like in German today. Some versions remove, they kind of collapse the first two everyone's into one. Even the NIV does that. That's why I'm reading this version. He says, look, notice it's a triple emphasis. Warning everyone, teaching everyone, that we may present everyone. So there's a warning and there's teaching and there's presentation. But it's everyone, no exceptions. Spiritual maturity is not just for those who feel like it. It's not just a good idea to be committed to Christ. It's not just a good idea to take seriously his words. Paul is very concerned for how people are doing. And there would be no exceptions. God understands if you don't have the energy now that you used to have when you were younger. God understands if you're just beginning and you don't know that much Bible, but you're growing. God understands if you have baggage, you have difficult emotional freight, shall we say, or trouble with relationships. God understands all those things. He just expects us to give our best, and he'll take care of the rest. No one is accepted, though. Everyone. Paul also clarifies that helping people is hard work. It's a struggle. He says, I toil and struggle for this with all the energy. Now, he says, yeah, the energy is inspired by God, but he says, I'm really struggling. I think he's saying he cares, and we should care. In fact, if Paul's saying to the Colossians, I really care about you, you should care about each other, and you should certainly care about yourselves. Helping people to mature spiritually, it's really hard work. It's not easy. Many begin well, but they don't end well. Some begin and hardly persevere at all. They're gone in days or weeks. The world is tough. Life is not fair. And there's a lot of pain. And everyone gets that. So it's hard work to help others to walk with God. Are you doing that? Are you helping people to walk with God? Maybe over a meal. Maybe you're meeting someone early in the morning, or maybe on a work break or late at night, weekends. Helping people walk with God. Helping people share love with others. And I mean particularly in the community of faith. We're not to walk alone. We truly need each other. Helping each other to resist the world. The temptations now are crazy. I mean, the temptations when I was a young Christian were many, but now they're just stronger and stronger every year. And we need to help each other to be ambassadors for Christ. All of these things are emphasized in Colossians. I think these are the kinds of things that Paul has in mind. So it's all about Christ, not us. This is serious. It's a warning. There to be no exceptions. Three times he says everyone. And then he emphasizes that to help people in this way is hard work. Of course, we care about those who are near us. But here Paul, like Jesus, models love for those whom he has never met. And that's why I choose this passage, because it motivates me to want to help people, not just people I know, but also people I'm getting to know or I may know in the future. Next week's lesson will be coming from another of my favorite passages in Colossians. This one's in chapter 4. But now let's close by reading again our text for today, which is 1:28 to 2:1. Please listen. It is Christ whom we proclaim, warning everyone and teaching everyone in all wisdom, so that we may present everyone mature in Christ. For this I toil and struggle with all the energy that he powerfully inspires within me. For I want you to know how much I am struggling for you, and for those in Laodicea, and for all who have not seen me face to face. Thanks for listening. God bless.